No one wants to wind up in the hospital, but it's not just the threat of a health crisis that makes us dread a visit. It's also the environment. Stark, sterile, cold, clinical, but hospitals are changing. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore efforts to make hospitals more pleasant and more effective places to heal. I'll talk with Rodney Deeser, professor of leisure, youth, and human services at the University of Northern Iowa, about what he's learned from studying the environment of the Mayo Clinic. I'll also talk with Bruce Schurting, director of Project Art at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and U of I child life specialist Emily Mozina. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Hospitals are stressful places. They're stressful for the patients, the people who love those patients, and for the people who take care of those patients. Iowa Public Radio production assistant Helena Thompson asked people in Iowa City to share their impressions of what hospitals are like.
Bright. Scary. Well, generally, I find myself in the hospital for my little guy who has a heart issue, so I'm usually a little anxious to hear what's going to be said. Trying to keep everybody calm and in a good mood is a little tricky when you take them into the hospital.
Stark and white and cold. It does feel sterile, which is a good thing in terms of germs, but in terms of the warmth, lacking.
Plain, utilitarian.
I don't usually dread going to the doctor's office, but when I'm there, I'm not like excited to be there. I don't know. Clean, like neutral and cold, probably.
Is clean, formal.
Sterile, gray.
I don't see the colorful walls. Just white, all white.
Well, the one we were in just this morning, I guess, was calm and quiet and sort of sad.
This hour, we're going to explore efforts to make hospitals less stressful for everyone involved. A lot of hospitals have been working on this for quite some time. We'll also talk about the impact those efforts can have on healing, on treatment, and on staff retention. With me this hour, Rodney Deeser. He is professor of leisure, youth, and human services at the University of Northern Iowa. He's also a licensed mental health counselor. Hello, Rodney.
Hello, and thanks for having me, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And I want to start with you. We'll bring a couple of other people into the conversation in a few minutes. But you just published a paper about decreasing patient stress and physician medical workforce burnout through healthcare environments. And you focused your research on the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And the Mayo Clinic is one of the hospitals that's really been a leader in providing leisure activities and creating a pleasant environment. Why has this been so important historically at the Mayo Clinic?
Well, let me start, Charity, by acknowledging the contributions of my two co-authors, Dr. Christopher Edgington, R.J. McElroy, Professor of Youth Leadership Studies at UNI, and Renee Ziemer, who's the coordinator of the W. Bruce Weiss Center for the History of Medicine and Mayo Clinic Historical Suites. Why has it been, historically part of the Mayo Clinic? I think it begins with the Mayo brothers and the father. So this is William Worrell Mayo, who opened up the Mayo Clinic in 1864, and his two sons, who really developed the Mayo Clinic. This is Charlie Mayo and William J. Mayo. They viewed health in a holistic way. They were both involved in all sorts of outdoor recreations in their childhoods. And what they really wanted to do historically was they wanted a patients to be overwhelmed with beauty. There was another doctor in the early history of the Mayo Clinic, Dr. Stanley Plummer, who was also involved with this. And basically, the four of them, more the two sons and Dr. Plummer, they wanted patients to be so overwhelmed with the beauty of coming to a clinic because they felt twofold. They felt two things. The one thing they felt was that they wanted patients to have confidence in their doctors. And they also, I just think, intuitively knew that the way you install a sense of comfort and confidence in doctors was to beautify things. And, you know, as they were trying to beautify, it was sort of the small cues that they sort of focused in on. When Dr. William Worrell Mayo was mayor of Rochester, Minnesota, he fought for a park. He was only a mayor for about a year and a half, and he fought to develop a park system. And the reason he wanted that park system is because he wanted patients to be overwhelmed with the beauty of the Mayo Clinic. And the brothers continued that. They purchased parks in 1907 and 1909. They developed 30 acres of land, and they created the Mayo Park. In 1908, they purchased another 4.5 acres of land, and they donated it to the Parks and Recreation Program. They developed the Mayo Baseball Fields in 1910, and there's historical photos of patients going to these baseball games. And then in 1938, they contributed half the cost. Today, that would be a little bit under about $500,000 to create the Mayo, what's considered today the Mayo Civic Center. And all of these were constructed right around the Mayo Clinic because of this belief that if patients felt that they were coming to a safe refuge.
Well, and for those of us who are fortunate enough not to have had a reason that we needed to go to the Mayo Clinic, describe what the hospital is like itself, because art, culture, leisure activities play an important role inside the walls of the hospital as well, right?
Yes. So, you know, I guess the best way I would answer that, Charity, is 2 years ago, I took a group of students from the University of Northern Iowa to the Mayo Clinic. And we entered, it's a huge campus, and we entered the Gonda building. And the comment that the students made to me was that they thought they were entering a grand hotel. There's just beauty all around. And when you walk in through the Gonda building, you go right into the Landau atrium, and there's a grand piano. And that grand piano just sits there. And it's actually for patients and staff to play. So outside organizations, they don't go in and play. It's for patients. And so there's times you can walk in there and you have a patient playing a piano. And it's pretty moving. And then you have these beautiful walls with beautiful art. You have these huge windows with sunshine coming in. And it doesn't seem like you're walking into a clinic.
Tell me about ways that you've seen just the pianos used. I know that you have an observation of watching a family come together around one of those pianos. Can you share what you saw?
Yeah, this is one of my favorite stories. And it was actually, Charity, a real privilege to be able to observe this. So I was at the Mayo Clinic. I was there fairly late. I think it was around 7 o'clock. And at 7 o'clock, there's not a whole lot of people walking around the Mayo Clinic. And I was on the second floor of the Gonda building, and below me is where the grand piano is. And, you know, the Mayo Clinic has grand pianos throughout their campus. And I'm just looking downward, and I see this family come out. And on one side of the atrium, it looks to me like it's mom and dad. And it's very apparent to me that mom is the patient. And then out of the waiting in the atrium were the adult children, three of them. And so there's this wonderful embrace. And you could see everyone was concerned about mom. They were asking questions and so forth. And then it's maybe a minute or two. It's not that long. But one of the adult sons moves over to the piano, and he starts playing the piano. And then, you know, within, I don't know, 15, maybe 20 seconds, the whole family's there. And the family is singing together. And I think that story really sort of exemplifies the power of leisure at the Mayo Clinic, the sense of control it can give people, small periods of it when life seems really, really out of control, and the social support you get in such a beautiful environment.
From looking at that, from experiencing that, you get the sense that this is a healthy thing. This is helping this family cope with a difficult time. It may even, that pleasure may even help the patient feel better, heal faster. But you actually went in to break this down scientifically, to do research about how these kind of leisure activities affected not just the patients, but the staff at the Mayo Clinic. And it will broaden the conversation to other hospitals, particularly hospitals in Iowa, in just a few minutes. But tell me exactly what you were trying to understand.
Well, you know, the study actually started on from a historical perspective and then just developed and it developed and it developed. But in the process of learning about the Mayo Clinic, I realized somewhere in that process that it's not just the patients that need these psychological breathers. Leisure as psychological breathers, but it's also physicians. I mean, there's national studies that underscore that, you know, half of physicians experience burnout at some time in their career. So the same effect of these psychological burnouts, so the sense of relaxation, social support, some degree of self-determination, and optimism, the optimism that comes through pleasant experience, it also affects physicians. And if I could tell you one other really neat story, and this just happened Friday. I was at the Mayo Clinic Friday meeting with one of my colleagues creating a research agenda. And I was walking through the St. Francis Peace Garden. It's this beautiful, beautiful garden that gives tribute to the sisters that also helped the sisters of St. Francis that helped develop the Mayo Clinic too. And you walk through this beautiful garden, and you have three different sections, these beautiful flowers, a tribute to Clare of Assisi. Then you go through this water area, a beautiful meditation area. And then you go into this area where you sit, and there's trees around. And when you're sitting there on a somewhat windy day, you can hear the leaves blowing. And there's four medical staff out there. And I was able to chat with one. One was a priest. Clergy, but their medical staff, you know their medical staff because they have their badges on. And, you know, that clergy member, he and I were just chatting, and he said, you know, this is my place where I decenter. He said, man, I had a hard day today, and I just come out here, and this place gives me peace.
Wow. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Rodney Deeser. He's a professor of leisure, youth, and human services at the University of Northern Iowa. And he co-authored a paper about decreasing patient stress and physician medical workforce burnout through healthcare environments, focusing his study on the Mayo Clinic. We're going to continue our conversation about hospital environments in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about hospital environments and how hospitals everywhere are working to make environments more pleasant for healing, for treatment, and for staff retention as well. I've been talking with Rodney Deeser, professor of leisure, youth, and human services at the University of Northern Iowa. He's also a licensed mental health counselor, and he's been studying the environment at the Mayo Clinic and how that impacts not just patients, but also the staff at the Mayo Clinic. And we want to broaden this conversation out to hospitals elsewhere, and we'd love to hear your experiences as well. Think about times when you've been in the hospital. What's something that made that experience easier to bear? Is there something that the staff was able to do that really helped your family or you as a patient feel better, heal better, and de-stress in that difficult environment, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I want to bring a couple of other people into the conversation now. Bruce Schurting is Director of Project Art at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Hello, Bruce.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for the invitation to this discussion.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And just in a nutshell, tell us what Project Art is.
Well, so Project Art has been around, has been part of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics since the mid-1970s, when a decision was made to try to make the healthcare environment more inviting. And the feedback that they got from patients and family and staff encouraged them to do a feasibility study and eventually established Project Art. And Project Art is charged with purchasing and placing art throughout the public spaces of the hospitals and clinics. And over time, it has expanded to include a musical program, music program, and looking through the history, there's have been poetry events, reading events, theatrical performances, and other things to engage the patients and families and visitors.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation as well. Emily Mozina is here. She's a certified child life specialist. She's also a senior lecturer at the University of Iowa. Hello, Emily.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And again, I'm going to ask you to give me a little bit of a definition. Child life is not something that everyone is familiar with. What does that mean?
A child life specialist is someone who works to help decrease stress. So when I run into someone or I'm teaching my students and we talk about child life, we try and give kids coping skills to deal with life stresses. So especially in the hospital environment, using play and developmentally appropriate communication to help children cope.
All right. And so that also plays into creating an environment that reduces stress for kids. And of course, at the University of Iowa, there's a brand new children's hospital. So there was an opportunity to try a lot of things in this new environment that people have learned about through studying child life in hospitals over the years. So give me an idea of some of the ways that the new children's hospital has been able to make the environment more pleasant, not just through activities, but through creating a space that will make children and families more comfortable.
Well, I think just the idea of patient and family-centered care and making sure that families feel welcome and that they can be there because they help children cope so much. And when you can help parents and children play together and communicate together, they can deal with that environment. Most of the pediatric floors have playrooms that are open 24 hours a day. So children, when they're ready, can get in there. They can play. They can have control and choice and choose different toys to take to their room or play within that space. Lots of natural light, beautiful walls and artwork to bring that color and just more happiness into their environment.
Well, and the artwork that we see on the walls of many hospitals now, and I remember back in, it was probably 1981 or 1982 as a child in a hospital with a broken leg. I don't remember any bright colors. I don't remember any art. I don't remember anything specifically geared toward making a child feel comfortable in the hospital. It was a pretty difficult experience. But now when you walk into, especially the children's wing of a hospital, it's fun. It's pretty. What role do you think just those bright colors and maybe whimsical motifs, what does that do for a child who is seriously ill?
I think it normalizes the environment. So it's not this scary, sterile place that they don't know if they can, you know, talk to people or do things. I think when you bring in those colors and those toys and those playthings and welcoming environment, kids can start to be themselves. And when they're playing, they're able to cope and they're able to heal faster. They're able to, you know, get up and move, which so many of them need to do. They need to be able to take those first steps and to walk and to eat. And when they have those places to walk to, like a playroom, and to be able to play and see other kids, I think it makes a huge difference.
Well, Bruce, as the director of Project Art, obviously you've been working very hard to place artistic objects to create an environment at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics with something visually interesting going on. What role do you think that plays for people in the hospital?
I think it's a very this idea of normalizing and making people feel comfortable and finding ways to what I might describe as meaningful distractions to take their minds off of the reasons that they're at the hospital, to engage them in activities like exploration and discovery. These are sort of some underlying design principles that went into the whole program of designing the hospital, the children's hospital. And that those things, if you can, what we sort of targeted or tried to do was to engage the parents in looking at the artwork, that they would in turn then engage their children in looking and exploring the artwork and what can we find here. So we tried to find pieces that were whimsical, surprising, unexpected, in addition to very bright and lively.
How do you think the art in the children's wing of the hospital differs from the art in the rest of the hospital?
Well, we tried to target artwork in a way for that space that had a sense of whimsy, was maybe a little bit more colorful or bright, but felt had a feeling that it was sort of childlike, but not simplified. And the reason for that is we wanted to engage all. Especially the parents, so that they would be attracted to the work as well. So I think we really tried to focus on whimsy and exploration, so that as you looked at the piece, you might ask yourself, "What is this? What is it made of? What's going on in the artwork?" And then as you look closer, you discover more. So that idea, I think you'll see throughout the hospital with the various wall treatments and other spaces.
So by talking about meaningful distraction, it's a way to not think so much about why you're there. I mean, give me an example of how you've seen this meaningful distraction enacted.
Well, I think I've seen a lot of, I see this quite a bit throughout the hospital because a lot of patients are here for extended stays. And so by having these opportunities to walk the corridor or whatever where art is on display, you see people stopping and looking and talking and discussing the piece that's in front of them. And so so on the main floor there's are these vitrines cases that are filled with objects. They're toys from a toy store. And as you look at these, you start to see that some of them are crossword puzzles, others are counting games. There's one that has an alphabet, and every letter, like, for example, the letter M, will have a little toy motorcycle, a mustache, a mandolin, a little mouse, and then there's a mirror, and the mirror is so that you are included. There's me in that artwork, and it's very clever. And so as you start to look at that and you start to play with each one of those letters and list off how many things relate to that letter that are circling that that block. So that would be what happens then is that people start to engage in the artwork and with each other and have a discussion, and they forget about why they're there.
And that can be pretty powerful, even just for a few minutes.
That was very important, I think. It's just that idea of normalizing, I think, and the example of the music, being able to play the piano and have a family gathering. I think those types of things are incredibly important.
We're talking about hospital environments, how they're changing, and how really we've learned so much about how the environment and different ways to interact with patients and staff can change that environment, make it more effective for healing, for treatment, and for staff retention. With me, Bruce Schurting, Director of Project Art at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, Emily Mozina, Certified Child Life Specialist and Senior Lecturer at the University of Iowa, and Rodney Deeser, Professor of Leisure, Youth, and Human Services at the University of Northern Iowa. And Rodney, in your research, you've kind of broken down the different kinds of leisure activities or leisure environments that you've seen studying the Mayo Clinic into different categories, which give us some insight into how these different categories of leisure really affect us. One of those categories is serious leisure. Tell me what that is.
So when most people think of leisure, they think leisure's relaxing, you know, taking it easy, sort of what Bruce just sort of described too about, you know, taking your mind off. And serious leisure is the opposite. Really, what's core about serious leisure is that someone develops serious skill sets, and the skill sets take months or years to develop. So, you know, at the Mayo Clinic, you have this sort of combination of casual and serious leisure. So one example is in the Humanities and Medicine program, they have the Art at the Bedside program. So if you're a patient at St. Mary's Hospital, for example, on the Mayo campus, and you've always wanted to learn to play a musical instrument like a violin, or you've always wanted to learn art or creative writing, they bring in actual artists, musicians, and they give beginning lessons right at the bedside. So they're engaged in this sort of serious leisure endeavor at the beginning. And what serious leisure, where it differs from casual leisure, is it's about achievement. It's about mastery. So it takes a lot of effort and time, and you get deeply engaged, which helps take your mind off the issues. Where casual leisure is more about relaxation and not putting a whole lot of effort. And at the Mayo Clinic, they have this combination, which I really like, of areas where you can be involved in serious leisure. Again, patients playing the piano to take care of other patients and to help them. You also have these parks and deep meditation parks throughout the Mayo campus, which is a serious leisure endeavor too. So you have this wonderful plethora, this wide range of activities, from carillon concerts to a peregrine falcon restoration project on the roof of the Mayo building. That's a partnership with the Midwest Peregrine Falcon Society, where patients are involved in restoration projects of baby peregrine falcons.
Thinking about, being in the hospital, it's not necessarily a time when you want to work hard. But what do you feel like these opportunities for serious leisure, what do they do for patients? And I realize often we're talking about people who are there a very long time. So boredom can be a very serious problem for somebody who's been in the hospital for weeks or maybe months. But what's the payoff for the patient beyond learning a new skill?
Well, I think one of the other payoffs is the development of friendships. So, I was listening at the beginning of the show, some of the comments that the show started off with hospitals being scary and sterile and lacking warmth and so forth. The one thing I was thinking I was going to hear was loneliness, the lonely aspects of a hospital setting, or the lonely aspects when someone has an illness. And maybe it's a terminal illness, or maybe it's an illness that there isn't a cure. The person has to learn how to manage that in life. And I know from my mental health background, there is a loneliness. And, I was at the Mayo Clinic. I was at their patient library. Now, the patient library is a recreation-based library. It's not health-oriented. It's got Xboxes, computer games. It's like a community library in the hospital setting. And there's a knitting group. And there's four women knitting, and they're in the they're from the pain rehabilitation program, so they're up there for 3 weeks, and they didn't know each other, and they all sort of realized that they wanted to learn how to knit. So they're up at the lunch hour at the patient library in the St. Mary's Hospital, and they're knitting together. And my sense is, I don't know this, I'm speculating now, Charity, but my sense is, as they're knitting, they're also sharing an experience that goes back to their pain rehab program. So you get this friendship development. It's really interesting to me how children can go up to another child. A child can go up to another child and say, "Will you be my friend?" But we don't do that as adults.
No.
So I think that's another beneficial aspect to the balance of casual and serious leisure that's at the Mayo Clinic.
I want to go to the phones. Erica's on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Charity.
Hi there. What would you like to
Thank
talk about?
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm just walking into a quieter place to talk, but I am calling because I am both a nurse and my daughter. I am sorry. I'm out of breath.
It's okay.
But my daughter was a patient pretty recently at the Mayo Clinic, and we had some wonderful, wonderful experiences with their child life specialist there. And I wanted to, I am so sorry, I just ran up the stairs. I'm currently at work. I work in a hospital, and we're also going through some construction, so trying to weave through that to get up to a quiet place. But
yeah, no worries. So with your daughter at the Mayo Clinic, who had gone through a surgery, right?
Right, that's right, yeah. And so in preparing her for that surgery, the child life specialist came into her pre-op room, and, you know, she was able to select the scent of her mask. You know, of course, it would deliver the medication to help her go to sleep. You know, she was able to select root beer to remind herself of her brother. And then I also got to carry her back to the OR, which was a really calming thing for her, mm-hmm. too. And that was coordinated through the child life expert. I call them experts. But,
how old is your daughter?
Our child. She, at the time, was about to turn 5.
Okay.
So, she was young and had a great amount of awareness, though, of what was happening. And that world to her felt very scary. But through the coping mechanisms and the support of the child life specialist, we were able to get her through that. And then she had to go back for 2 other visits there, and each one just got easier because she knew what to expect.
Easier for her and easier for you, it sounds like.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, Erica, yeah, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experience. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about hospital environments and things that hospitals are doing to make the environment less stressful, more positive, more conducive for healing, for treatment, and for staff retention. With me, Emily Mozina, certified child life specialist and senior lecturer at the University of Iowa, Bruce Schurting of Project ART, and Rodney Deeser from the University of Northern Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled, and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about hospitals and the environments at hospitals, ways that hospitals are changing to make the environment more pleasant, less stressful for patients, for families, and for the staff that treats the patients. You are welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can share a positive experience you've had at a hospital or a negative experience you've had at a hospital. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Rodney Deeser, Professor of Leisure, Youth, and Human Services at the University of Northern Iowa, Bruce Schurting, Director of Project ART at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and Emily Mozina, Certified Child Life Specialist and Senior Lecturer at the University of Iowa. And Emily, just before the break, Erica was talking about her experience at the Mayo Clinic with her young daughter who was going through a surgery and the child life specialist there. And she brought up the fact that her daughter got to choose what her anesthesia mask would smell like. You do a lot as a child life specialist to help children feel comfortable with all of that scary equipment around them, right? What do you do?
Well, a lot of times, especially with a 5-year-old, is allowing them to play and allowing them to experience those medical equipments or doctor equipment so that they can understand. Children learn best through play. It's not as easy to just tell a 5-year-old what is about to happen in surgery, but if you can let them manipulate the anesthesia mask and choose where they're going to sit or who is going to hold their hand or how they're going to get to the OR. If there's things that you can allow a child to choose, they're going to cope a lot better.
It gives them a sense of control.
Absolutely. And hopefully reduces their anxiety, their stress, and, you know, the parents' stress by giving the parents information even while you're playing with the child and helping that whole family cope.
Well, I can imagine that also reduces staff stress as well, because treating a terrified child is difficult for a doctor or a nurse too.
I can't speak on their behalf, but I do feel that, you know, if, if a child life specialist or another healthcare team member can come in and help distract a child or give them coping techniques and help explain what's happening so that the child can be more cooperative, so that they don't have to be held down, or that there's not, that sense of, being terrified there. But if they have some control, if they're playing, they're blowing bubbles. It's amazing, blowing bubbles, and we always say that kind of magic, that when a child's able to breathe, blow bubbles, is a little distracted and can calm down, that they can be more cooperative and make that whole experience a little easier. You can't take away the pain and you can't take away that uncomfortableness, but if you can make it a little easier in case they do have to come back and go to the treatment room the next day.
Well, and I have read articles about how fear heightens pain as well. So it actually does reduce the pain that these children are experiencing.
I believe so. And I do think there's research out there and there's studies out there that you can, reduce that perception of pain by having distraction and having preparation for children.
You are often working with children who are very, very sick. And a lot of the kids that have to spend a lot of time in the hospital, of course, are going through cancer treatment or something like that. They can be in a situation where their immune system is really depressed. And you're talking about a playroom, talking about toys. Is that a major challenge for child life specialists, making sure that the environment isn't going to compromise somebody's health if there are kids sharing toys with each other?
I'm sure that's always an issue in hospitals across the country. There are often infection control policies at each hospital and ways to wash the toys and disinfect toys and so that, you don't have that cross-contamination, but they're cleaning in between patients playing. And often, if there is a child, they may not be able to come to the playroom. You may take then activities to them, which I think is very important for a child if they can't leave their room, to be able to bring things to them so that they can play, that they can do artwork, that they can have those experiences.
Let's get back to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Gary is on the line in Cumming. Hi, Gary.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for calling. And you have a difficult hospital memory from way back in the 1950s, right?
Yeah, I was had the dubious distinction of spending time in the hospital in Fort Dodge, Iowa. Not to trash Fort Dodge, Iowa. I've been in their hospital recently, not as a patient, but as a visitor, and it's like night and day difference. But here's the thing that I want to convey, that I remember how depressing that environment was. I mean, it was like, if you ever watch One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest, that's the closest thing that I can compare it to. But one thing, the one element that brightened my day is that, like, once a week, I had a candy striper that would come in and play checkers with me. And it was like, I remember that young girl, and I'm 6 or 7 at the time, but I just can't. I mean, that made such a difference in my whole experience. So, despite, and the hospitals today are unbelievable. I just can't believe all the changes that they've made. But I think the one factor that we have to keep, and I think you've done this, but is the human element, because that's what really, makes the patient, that makes the difference. So that was my point.
Yeah, Gary, thank you so much for sharing your experience. And so we did have an inkling of an idea that things like this helped patients in the 50s, but for a kid in the hospital for several weeks, having a candy striper come once a week was the highlight for him. But I mean, Emily, that's a lot of time in between. So, I mean, a child life specialist today would interact with a child on a daily basis?
It depends on the census and, the size of the child life program. There's one-person child life programs, and then there's really large child life programs. So I think it depends on that. But listening to your caller, it makes sense. When I teach my students, I talk about, you know, for play to happen, you need to have the space, you need to have that playroom, you need to have the equipment, the toys, and you need to have that person, that kind of stage manager, or a child life specialist to help facilitate that, because sometimes, again, a child may be scared and intimidated and not sure if they can go into the playroom or not sure if they can play while they're in the hospital. And I think having someone there that interacts and encourages that child to play is so important.
Peter is on the line next in West Des Moines. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Charity. I have to say, I had a recent experience at an emergency room here in Des Moines with my elderly mother. And it was interesting because, you know, if we don't really think about, because I'm a senior, but I'm not elderly. But elderly people have problems with, like, skin that is really loose. And so when you tape an IV to their skin and then try to remove it, it tends to tear the skin. And they also get cold very easily. And so in this situation, they weren't able to take a blanket, and they have blankets that you can actually stick in a microwave to warm them up. And so the whole situation of dealing with her and her needs, they dropped the ball. And it's a thought process, obviously, for hospitals, because I think these days, you know, dealing with children has become much better. My wife's a pediatric surgical nurse at Children's Hospital in Milwaukee. And so they have all kinds of things for kids. But dealing with elderly patients, there are situations where, like I said, this particular emergency room really dropped the ball.
Well, Peter, thank you. Yeah.
And my grandfather used to say that considering the expense of hospitals, they should be run like the best hotel in Paris, France, because the money is unbelievable, the expense, and you know, hospital care. And it's all about, in some ways, customer service, which is what I'm involved in every day of my life.
Well, Peter, I want to give our guests an opportunity to react to that. I think a lot of us have had negative experiences in hospitals. Bruce, I'd love to get your response to that, because while you're not there in the ER trying to help patients feel more comfortable, I mean, there are efforts to make adult and elderly patients feel more comfortable in hospitals, too. How do you feel that kind of work has evolved?
I think the comment is kind of correct, is that a lot of focus, certainly here right now, has been placed on the children's hospital and children's care. But I think that, you know, this idea of finding ways to engage adults may be a little bit more challenging, but there are, as Rodney mentioned, this opportunities for learning to play instruments. We have a couple music therapists that go around and engage with adult patients. And we also have a program that's been around for quite a while called the Art Cart, where volunteers go from room to room, well, in prescribed areas where it's safe to do so, and engage patients in a discussion about art and allow them to choose artwork from the art cart to have in their room during their stay. So the art is sort of a vehicle to engage the patient in discussion about art or wherever the conversation might go. And I think that's a very interesting way to engage adult patients.
Now, one of the observations that I've had just visiting different parts of the hospital is, while the children's wing looks fun and the colors are bright, the beauty, the art in the adult wing tends to be more serious, maybe a little more formal. But what about the fun stuff for grown-ups? Grown-ups like to have fun too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you're seeing is sort of a history, an evolution in the philosophy of the type of art that is being purchased today as opposed to before. And it's sort of interesting to walk through the hospitals and clinics here, because if you start at the general hospital and then walk through the corridors toward the children's hospital, it's almost like you're seeing an evolution in the thought process or the philosophy behind what type of art is appropriate or beneficial in hospital or healthcare settings. So yeah, currently I'm working for looking for artwork for heart and vascular and adult inpatient spaces, and taking a different approach to the type of art that will go into those spaces.
Now, you mentioned musical performances before, and I know that you bring in musicians so that, you know, somebody could take a walk down the hall and maybe listen to something or, you know, listen to a reading. But you also have a couple of different bands that involve staff members?
Yes. Mark Burnett, who is the program manager for the performing arts, has over the years, I guess his tenure here, has sort of established three different types of bands. He, I think one is it's a concert band, another is an orchestra, and a jazz band. And these have grown over the years. I think he started out with just a handful of musicians, and I think the orchestra now is up to 40 performers, and all of these are staff, faculty, and trainees that are in these musical bands. And it's really sort of going back to the idea that Rodney talked about, this sense of building community, the camaraderie, and it provides a creative outlet for the staff. And then the patients also benefit because they put on concerts.
Well, and I can imagine that a staff member who likes where they are and feels comfortable with their coworkers, they're probably a little better at their job, too.
I think so, yeah. I think it's that idea of just building a stronger sense of community and collaboration.
Well, and Rodney, we only have 2 minutes left here, but in your research with the Mayo Clinic, part of it was about staff retention and staff morale. I mean, how much of a difference do you feel this can make? Because, of course, the hospitals want to keep their doctors and their nurses and their other staff members.
Well, I'm hoping to find more about that. So I mentioned I was at the Mayo Clinic last Friday, and I was working on a research agenda, and we're hoping to learn more about that. You know, this is just a correlational thought, Charity, that the Mayo Clinic has one of the lowest, if not the lowest, attrition rates amongst physicians. And it's a facility that deals with, you know, some of the most difficult medical cases. So I don't know what, I can't say it in a definitive way, but my very best guess is that, it also creates this sense of belongingness and community amongst physicians.
This feels like a field that is progressing very quickly right now. Emily, what's your take on that? Because I know child life has grown a great deal throughout the United States, throughout the world as well. Does this feel like an idea that is spreading kind of like wildfire at the moment, changing these environments?
I hope so. I think that people are realizing, you know, when there are those environments that are welcoming and encourage play, that kids are coping better and families are happier. And that's what healthcare environments want. They want patients that are satisfied and you know, happy with their care.
And Bruce, what's your take on that? I mean, you mentioned that Project ART started in the 1970s, but again, this seems like an idea that is growing.
Yeah, I think it's sort of awareness, really, that just other experiences that we have out in the world. Why are they not part of the experience in healthcare settings? And this idea of a patient-centered approach, where everything that's being done in the design of the hospitals, in the development of the programming, in the aesthetic environment, creating an aesthetic environment, is all focused on how does this improve the patient and family experience. And I think that's a big driver of a lot of the change that we're witnessing in hospitals and healthcare centers, and all the research that has been going into that.
Well, Bruce Schirding, thank you so much for talking with me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bruce Schirding, Director of Project ART at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Emily Mozina, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Emily Mozina, certified child life specialist and senior lecturer at the University of Iowa. And Rodney Deeser, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Charity.
Rodney Deeser, professor of leisure, youth, and human services at the University of Northern Iowa. He's also a licensed mental health counselor and has recently published some of his work citing the environment at the Mayo Clinic and how that affects patients and staff there. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Lindsay Moon, Dennis Reese, Ben Stanton, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.